Let's call the Bladen City Council meeting to order, May 14th at 6:05 PM. Can we have a moment of silence, please? Please join me and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance is to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Would the audience please check their cell phones and electronic devices and make sure they're turned off, please? We appreciate that. Also, I'd like to thank all of you for coming. We don't do that quite often enough. I appreciate looking out there and seeing the chamber full. We're always glad to have a full house. And can we have roll call, Sam? Sorry. Nope, red light's on. Can you hear that one? Okay. Okay, Sam, can we have roll call, please?
All right, we have Eric Gibbonson.
Here.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Meg Olson. Alicia Rule.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
And Bonnie Onion requested to be excused.
I'll accept a motion for Bonnie to be excused.
So moved.
Second.
So it's been moved by Mary Lou and seconded by Eric. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 And audience participation. And Paula Smith, would you please come up, please?
I'm going to comment on an initiative that some of us are working on for Washington State on healthcare, I-1600.
Please tell about it, and on the backside, there's an example here, this is one of the writers.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have to.
Yeah, the local group, the Watkin County Group, is working on this. It's called Watkin Yes on I-1600. And so it's a universal health care for Washington State. We have, we support other initiatives for single payer, universal health care that come up. This one is right here for us, and we could start with our state. Everyone would be covered. It would cost less for everyone. Because at least pharmaceuticals could be bought down by us as a state working together to make that happen, and we wouldn't have the insurance companies taking a huge amount of money off the top. Those are some of the reasons that you may already know. But it also, this could be very good for businesses. The Fix-It, I don't know if you've ever heard of that, is a little movie on this stuff. Tells about, you know, these people in large businesses, corporations, and saying it takes a lot of money to insure our people, and we have a lot to do here to make our business go, and it's going, but this would cost everyone less. The amount the employer would put in and the amount the employee would put in. Ears, teeth are covered for everyone. The 500,000 people in the state who are not covered at all. The other people that, this is just one of the signs that we need to, there's very little news around that this is even happening because it's so grassroots that we have no money to make it known. So we need 500,000 signatures by July 1st, and we're nowhere near that. So I've been working on it since the end of February, very hard and loving it and explaining it. And Whatcom County's group that just fell together and keeps coming together, more people, they know inside themselves already. So when they hear that everyone can be covered and it's one of those kind of plans, they jump in with us, take petitions, and go for it. So our little group up here in Whatcom County is the best in the whole state. We're known as the All-Stars. So just wanted to let you know that it's happening, and, you know, if you have a chance to sign the petition or anything, thank you.
Thank you, Paula, and keep up the good work. Okay, we have some proclamations to put out. We appreciate you driving up and coming up to Blaine. This is a proclamation from the city of Blaine. Whereas, okay, this is what was for all of you. Cut. Whereas Senator Doug Erickson, Representative Vincent Byers, and Representative Luann Van Boren represent the city of Blaine and Olympia, and have enthusiastically promoted Blaine's legislative priorities throughout the past legislative session, and whereas the efforts put forward by Blaine's legislative delegation result in a successful request from the supplemental capital budget for $1.2 million to complete the utility infrastructure to the East Maple Ridge Platte as part of the East Blaine Infrastructure Project, and whereas 42nd District Legislature jointly sponsored a successful request for $550,000 from the supplemental transportation budget to fund a new interchange justification report to allocate to alleviate congestion and lack of freeway access at exit 274, and whereas each of Blaine's legislatures has fought to protect historical revenue sharing between the state and local governments, and whereas each legislator displayed active participation with the partnerships and with the city while maintaining an open door policy, and were thoughtful, supportive, and gracious for each meeting and communication from Blaine to their delegation on legislative matters. And whereas the city would like to express genuine gratitude for the hard work and success throughout the 2017 and 2018 buy-in for by Blaine's legislators to improve our community. Now, therefore, and this was with Bonnie, I, Bonnie Onion, the city of Blaine, do proclaim that the city gives thanks to each member of the 42nd District Legislative District Delegation, Senator Doug Erickson, Representative Vincent Byers, and Representative Luann Van Warren, for their diligent effort and extraordinary teamwork in Olympia during the 2017-2018 legislative session. We dearly appreciate and thank everything you've done.
Thank you so much. Well, this means a lot, and I would say we're just doing our job, but it gives me such great pleasure to be able to work on behalf of this wonderful community. And it says in here that it takes teamwork, and I just want to say that the teamwork includes you all and the mayor, who came down and visited us several times. And so I appreciate that we work together as a team to make this happen, but we're not done yet. You know, these are just the down payment for what we want to do. And so I'm hoping that I see lots of visits from you down in Olympia this next year so that we can carry this over the finish line. And so it's wonderful to be recognized. I don't need the recognition, but it's really, the gratitude just means so much to me. So thank you very much.
Okay, and we have one more. come up, Graham? Very, very nice.
Okay, so another proclamation.
Whereas an average of 700 people die each year in voting-related accidents in the United States, approximately 80% of those are fatalities caused by drowning. And whereas the vast majority of these accidents are caused by human error or poor judgment, not by the boat, equipment, or environmental factors. And whereas a significant number of boaters who lose their lives by drowning each year would be alive today if they would wear a life jacket. And whereas today's life jackets are more comfortable, attractive, than styles of the past, now therefore it be resolved that I, Steve Lawrenson, Mayor Pro Tem of the City of Blaine, Washington, do hereby support the goals of the North American Safe Boating Campaign, Wear It, and the United States Power Squadron, and proclaim the week of May 19th through the 25th of 2018 as National Safe Boating Week in the City of Blaine, Washington, and the start of year-round efforts to promote safe boating. I witness there I urge all who boat to wear it and practice safe boating habits, signed this 14th day of May by Mayor Pro Tem Steve Lawrenson.
Thank you.
Just very briefly, I would like to thank the City of Blaine and the Port of Bellingham as well for a very successful Sea Skills Boating Festival we just had last Saturday here in the marina in Blaine. And we had great support from the City of Blaine with signage and other tangible benefits for the our activities. And we really appreciate the City for their help. Just want to mention that the United States Power Squadron, we're the part of the Bellingham unit of that group, don't wear our life jackets to bed, but almost do. We just like to point out that they're really important and very easy to wear. And thank you all very much.
Okay, next up is the Fire Chief's Report. North Blocking County Chief Holland.
Evening, Council. This week I'm sharing the newsletter, a monthly newsletter with you. There's some good articles in there about some retiree party that we had last week. And also last week was our National Dispatchers Week. And if you don't know about dispatchers, I mean, they're the ones that answer the 911 calls, and they're critical. So a little opportunity to blow their horn. And then the CPR classes are still going on. We still offer those. And then on the back there's an article about a bike donation and a mock MCI drill mock DUI drill that we did at Meridian High School. And we do move those around the county, so we have one at Blaine. I believe next year is Blaine High School's turn again, so we'll be doing one there. With that, just one other sad note. There was a fatality on the truck route this weekend, unfortunately. Thought I'd point that out if you hadn't heard or read about it in the paper. And with that, I'll answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for the Chief?
Nope. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chief. Okay, next is the consent agenda. We have a voucher memo, approval of bills of $304,920.56. A wire transfer of $359,490.85. Approval of payroll for $538,411.74. Approval of the April 23rd, 2018 Council meeting minutes and the resolution 1732-18 surplus property.
Okay.
Yes.
Item
4, resolution
1732-18 surplus property. I believe it's tied thematically at least to another item later in the agenda. Are you discussing that plan?
Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Yeah, we can add that to the council action item list.
Thank you.
Okay, so we will pull item 4 for later discussion then. Do I hear a motion on approving the agenda?
So moved.
Moved by Councilwoman Madison, and second by Charlie Hawkins, to approve the agenda assembly. All in favor, say by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays? All right. And now we're going to start a public hearing. We have two this evening. Raven, are you going to start us off on the amending the municipal code chapter street vacations? Thank you.
Thank you, Council. By popular demand, I'm going to just run through a little bit of the study session that we had done back in January for some of the council members that were here, and also for the benefit of the public. And then the city attorney, John Sipkin, is here to answer questions specifically that council raised at the study session. And so we'll just go from there. So street vacation is a process identified by law in RCW. I'm going to go over some really quick reasons to vacate and reasons to retain right of way. A little bit on what state law and city code each have, because there are some specific elements of the state law that we want the new code to align with, where we found some discrepancies. And then for discussion, some areas of law to clarify, one of them being the decision criteria. So we have John speak to that. And then we'll open it up for public comment, public testimony. So first, some typical reasons to vacate right-of-way. It's essentially giving up a street right-of-way, whether it was dedicated or deeded to the city in another fashion. It's used to resolve issues with title. Often, we might also want to consolidate areas of right-of-way that have never been opened. It's also a way that we can transfer property where there's little remnants that have been left on narrow strips that just don't make any sense or not part of the street system. Clouds of title, often buildings that are built in the right-of-way, maybe not intentionally, but can remove that cloud of title if there's no interest in the city to keep that right-of-way. The public benefit is not sufficient enough to justify ongoing cost of maintenance is another reason to vacate. Sometimes we have landlocked or inaccessible pieces of right-of-way, so that's on the list, as well as and where we're seeing the most in land is where a dedicated right-of-way is too wide for the future need of the street. We have some neighborhoods in the city with some pretty wide right-of-ways. Reasons to retain the right-of-way or keep the right-of-way is if it is part of an open, active street or utility corridor. And this one is very near and dear to my heart. If landscaping or fencing exists, then it's not a way of acquiring adverse possession. So adverse possession doesn't apply to right-of-ways. Also, there's another reason is that we have seen this in Blaine where we've vacated right-of-way in the past and then we have to repurchase it in the future. So we're not very interested in vacating right-of-way in exchange for an easement, as an example, because easements typically do not have the same rights as a right-of-way. It makes a lot of sense. We don't have as much control of the property in the case of an easement. And oftentimes, when an easement, you need to get permission from the owner to maintain it. Or you might be subject to having to pay for restoration if you do the maintenance on that site. So, example, if it's a parking lot that is built over an easement, and you need to get into that utility, you're often paying for that asphalt to be replaced in that parking lot because it's not yours. It's just an easement. So right-of-ways that are open and actively used are not typically recommended for vacation. street vacations often disrupt an existing continuous corridor. We've had that conversation in the past where we've had a request for a vacation that kind of just creates a gap tooth in a very nice long right-of-way corridor. And then it's really, well, we're not seeing the public benefit. It's really very hard to reverse riding, I think, vacation, excuse me, I think John will speak a little bit to that, he has his comments, but, so those are kind of some guidelines. And just have a quick slide on showing you what an example of a future public need is. So this is an area where we have an 80-foot right-of-way corridor. We did a sidewalk improvement. Well, the right-of-way wasn't needed for the sidewalk specifically, but that area behind the sidewalk, before the property owner's fence, is a water treatment facility for that street project. Without those corridors available when we have street projects, we end up having to buy land to do that treatment, or we end up needing to do that treatment below the ground and with a much more expensive structure, like a concrete vault as an example. So those are things that we want to avoid. So state law has a fairly straightforward process, a petition, resolution, providing notice of a public hearing, having that hearing and a decision, having the money exchange hands, and then filing ordinance that actually gets recorded. So scenarios where we varied from the state law that we're fixing in the ordinance before you this evening is the previous process identified after the petition phase, coming to you with preliminary findings and giving you the option of scheduling a public hearing. And we had some findings that we listed in that particular step. State law actually says if you have a valid petition and you have two-thirds of the property owners that sign that petition that are abutting property owners, we're required to set a public hearing. So thankfully, we've had a public hearing in other cases since I've been here, but we want to fix that problem. So this resolution process to either deny or return for future information will go away. We would have that staff report presented to you at the time of the public hearing, and if decision criteria are retained in the ordinance, we would spell that out for you and where we think it meets that. The decision aspect aligns with state law. The other piece of state law that didn't quite align is in our code right now with a type 1 and type 2 definition that relates to compensation. And what it says is that if it was deeded where the city paid fee simple for that property, that the petitioner would have to pay 100% of the value. But if it were dedicated, that we accept 50% of the value. Actually, the way the state law says is if it's been dedicated by 20 years or more, the city may get full compensation or 100% compensation in the case of a dedication. So we would like to fix that as well. We don't want bargain real estate and bring to be our right-of-ways. And then you've seen this in front of you a couple of times with the street vacations that you have heard from, but this is the criteria for council decision that is currently not in the ordinance before you this evening. Mr. Sitt can speak to that. And I'm actually wondering if this might be just as good a time to have John come up because those are next steps. So John, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Raven.
I'm going to address the public benefit question.
And then, thank you. And then I'm also going to respond to the questions that Mr. Ellison presented to you, and I have a memo to that effect, and I'll share that. The state legislature has granted the city wide discretion to whether you want to vacate a right-of-way or not. It's your property. You can elect to vacate or not. The only requirement that's imposed and a lot of court decisions is that you find some element of the public interest, the vacation being in the public interest. And that is broad. It's not nearly defined. You determine what's in the public interest. And the courts have said as long as there's not fraud or collusion, as long as there's some basis that's rational for finding of public interest, they're going to grant you deference to that finding. My recommendation to you is not put a new criteria in your ordinance about finding or what public benefit or use is associated with the vacation request, because then you impose a standard on yourself that you must meet. And courts would review then whether you met your standard that you imposed rather than the broad discretion that the legislature granted to you. So I would discourage you from requiring a finding of some public benefit or purpose and then providing a definition in your code, because I think you limit yourself in your actions and you create more risk in the future. So I would leave it as the state legislature has granted to you with the broad discretion to determine public interest at the time and in accordance with each vacation request. Okay. So I'm going to pass out so with that, unless there's questions regarding that, but that's my recommendation to you as your counsel. And then I'll pass the memo out that I can to address this.
Eric, do you have a question?
So your recommendation is to not put us in a box and say these requirements.
Yes.
What about just a verbiage that says, you know, some of the items that may be considered are kind of as a guidance kind of thing? Does that also put us in a box? Because my fear is that we are doing a lot with vacations now, and then we have nothing for 5 years, and a whole new city council doesn't remember anything of what we're doing. And so do you see what I'm saying? Does that also kind of paint us in a corner?
We could, but I would draft it so broad, you know, that it's – I would recommend instead that the administration, if you have some policy or guidance from the staff, that here's, you know, that here's what we have, some form that they pass out based upon what their recommendations would be based upon. But you could do something broad that says that when it's in the public interest, as determined by the council at the time associated with each vacation request, factors that may be considered, and it's a low, 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 low bar. It could be that because maintenance will be less costly in the future. There will be less expense to the city because we have less streets to maintain. I mean, it could be as simple as that, as a rationale to vacate a road or a right-of-way. So when you start saying there must be some affirmative public interest or benefit, I get concerned, because that's a finding you need to make, and if there's not facts to support it and someone wants to challenge it, you've created risk to that vacation.
Thank you.
But we could do that, Councilman.
Any other questions?
Pat, you just said very clearly it's a very, very, very low bar. And I think that in the lowest of the bar is something that council has some concern about, in that you don't necessarily want to be a low enough bar that the field is giving away public money.
I wouldn't say it's capricious, just because that's a term of art in law. So, but I understand what you're saying. But I would say that that's your decision. You have that flexibility and discretion. And if you start putting a criteria on a decision, you've restrained yourself from exercising that discretion later in some unknown case that you may have come before you. And I'm trying to discourage you from imposing that limit on your decision-making, and wait till a case comes before you to make a decision.
Okay. Understood. In that context, then, I'm misunderstanding something. Has a definition.
And that was drafted because we understood you wanted that, and I'm here to discourage you from including that. And that's one of the reasons I told Raven I want to be here, because rather than just send a memo and say, don't include it. I wanted to come up and tell you my recommendation, and Raven wanted to include that because that's what your direction was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to recommend against that. You make the call. I would strike that out. We have later under section 020D that says it must be in the public interest.
Where?
020D, I think it's, if I recall that. 0702D.
Because I wanted to make sure that we didn't have absolutely nothing.
There's a provision in there that says it has to be in the public interest,
And rather than defining public interest in your definition sections, I want to give you the chance at each request to make a determination at that time whether it's in the public interest, rather than trying to define that concept today. Because facts 5 or 10 years from now in council might be different.
Understood.
Any other questions for John?
And I would like to then walk through Dennis's questions for you, and we can give Dennis a copy. I think the memo is circulating. So the first question was abutting, and this is often a large question. What's abutting? We have 9th Street that goes 10 blocks. Is this little section, you know, between two streets, but I'm on 9th, 2 blocks away, am I abutting the vacation? And I would say no. You're not abutting. Abutting by definition is when you're immediately next to the property sought to be vacated. You are sharing a boundary in some fashion. That's what abutting is. Would abutting apply throughout the ordinance? Yes, that concept of abutting would apply throughout. That was the question. The question from Dennis was, is the definition of public use to be used by council making a decision request for vacation? That's, I think I've addressed that with you already. My recommendation, I gave you some outline of some case law and some code regarding that in my recommendation, and I refer you to 0702D. Is there provisions for the effective vacation of quality of life and property values in the neighborhood? You can decide that. That's in your discretion. Something could be highly in the public interest to grant something, but you can say, you know, we're not going to do it because we have other competing considerations that might be quality of life. I always tell councils, I never know what quality of life is because that's a subjective viewpoint in my view. But, you know, does it affect the property values in the neighborhood? You can consider that in denying. That's the whole discretion. If you start saying and defining public benefit and use as the criteria to prove or not, you start narrowing the freedom you have in making your decision. Do 2/3 of the owners have to sign a petition for vacation to proceed? Let's step back so you understand how vacations work. You can initiate a vacation process at any time as city council. You don't need signatures to come forward. As Raven mentioned, if you have the abutting property owners, of 2/3 of the abutting property owners, you must set the public hearing. Doesn't mean you have to grant the vacation, but you must set the public hearing. You can at any time decide to proceed with a vacation of a right-of-way, should you so want to. If you get 50% of the abutting property owners objecting, you may not proceed. Okay. Who receives notice? Notice under the state law is to go to the abutting parcel owners for any hearing. If you want to extend that beyond that, you have that authority, but again, now you start creating procedural requirements that could create a catch if they aren't met in a vacation process and cause you to start over. But the notice is only required to be sent to the abutting property owners. Why is written notice required by 50% of the notice when the resolution requires? Well, the question to me wasn't clear, but this is a state legislative requirement. The 2/3 is only a procedure that you must hold the public hearing. Written notice required by 50% is only that you 50% of the property owners can stop a vacation request if it's a council-initiated vacation request. Either property owners not signing a petition or to formally oppose a vacation, or yes. Just a property who doesn't appear, who doesn't speak, is not considered an opponent. They're no comment. They're not an opponent to it. State law has long held that those property owners who do not abut the vacation don't have standing. And that's my concern, is that you start saying, defining public interest and provide it broadly, more people might have standing to challenge vacation requests, and you could find people just want to challenge things for a punitive basis because they don't like somebody and they want to appear and start causing problems. So that's why I'm encouraging you not to create more opportunities. What is meant by property owners when there are unequal numbers on each side? Perhaps it is more logical to use front footage rather than number of property owners. You can't go to front unit footage. That's inconsistent with state law. It's abutting property owners with drive notice and all the rest. Under what circumstances would the city council initiate the vacation of an open street surface and not use? Well, that's a speculation. We can't answer that today. Why or when the city council might decide to proceed with a vacation of a surface street, but you have that authority to go through that process. Can the city require other conditions as a condition of vacation? It has been my view that you can impose conditions that are in the public interest, that are directly tied to the vacation. You can require the compensation, and must require the compensation to be paid before the effective date of the ordinance, and the vacation is not effective until the compensation is paid. You can, under state law, require the retention of easements for utilities, stormwater, and other similar things. But should there be a circumstance where some other consideration, and I can't think of it at the moment, that is in the public interest, you could impose that as a condition. Not trying to extract a benefit from somebody, but if it's directly related to the effect of the vacation that the property owner could address. It's hard for me to conceive what that would be other than retention of an easement, but in theory, you could do that. So, but again, it's hard for me to conceive what that might be that's directly related to the impact or effect of a vacation of a right-of-way that you would impose on a vacation, but in theory, you could. So, Councilmember Olson, I see you. Your mind's hard at work with what I'm saying. So do you have questions?
I have a couple. I think that Mr. Olson's concerns, as well as some other concerns, have a chat just went up in the neighborhood. Are people who are not abutting property owners, but if that particular right-of-way plays a role in the neighborhood, people walk through it, and people want to make sure that the public benefit that they perceive is being represented before council and that their voices are heard before any vacations move forward. So you brought up a couple of terms I'd like you to clarify for me. You were saying that abutting property owners versus front footage, that it doesn't make sense. That it only
state statute has no reference to front footage.
Right, okay.
And so notice is required to go to the abutting property owners to the area of the vacation that's street's length. That's proposed for vacation. Going four blocks down is not required under state statute.
Well, that my question
across
is...
Across the street from a vacated roadway, they would likely be abutting.
But across the street, one door down...
One going down the block would not necessarily be abutting. You could expand... You have the authority in your statute to expand the notice requirements... You have that discretion as a city council to put that in your code for any vacation process. The state statute puts forth the minimum notice requirements. You could require more. I'm just saying that you're adding the cost of the vacation and you're adding procedural requirements that could, if it wasn't met, you'd start over.
In regards to procedural requirements, though, I know, for example, just in newspaper business, we are a party of record, and we are in file with various and sundry governmental bodies, that if there's an application to do this, you notify the newspaper. There are people in the community of Point Roberts, at least, who are on file with Whatcom County, and every time you breathe, please notify me, and I'm part of the record. If someone is particularly interested in street vacations in their neighborhood, could they be on file with the city to be noticed?
Should you want to require that you provide notice to the press and provide notice to those requesting notice, you can include that in your code. The vacation ordinance is not part of the land use code and the notice requirements. What I'm telling you is the minimum from the state law and the notice requirements is to the abutting property owners. There's been cases that say those outside of the abutting property owners don't have standing to challenge a vacation because they have no interest at stake to the vacation of that right-of-way is the approach, the argument the courts have taken on this. Should you want to expand the notice requirement, you have that discretion to do so. So if you wanted to say within 300 feet of the proposed vacation, part of the property owners within 300 feet of the area of the proposed vacation get notice, you could require that. That would go be, could go beyond the abutting property owners.
That would be, to give them notice, not giving them the right to challenge the vacation.
It would give them notice. There would be a public hearing. They could appeal. If they wanted to file a lawsuit to challenge your decision, I may argue they don't have standing because they have no vested interest. But that would be if they challenged a vacation that you authorized. But they would be able to speak to you and argue why it's not.
It's to be able to speak and know that it's happening and that I'm trying to address.
And they could try to make it persuade you in a public hearing process why this isn't in the public interest and why you should exercise your discretion not to do it. I don't want to forego my issue of arguing standing if I'm before a judge and you've made a decision affirmatively to approve something. I don't want to forego my arguments. So I'm just saying you give them notice, you have the right to participate. Whether they have standing after that, we'd battle that out in court if that ever came up. But they would have the ability to persuade you.
That's what I'm trying to accomplish, so, is to widen the window where people have an opportunity to know that a vacation went out.
I think they want to speak to it.
So just one item of note. While it might not be required notice in the mail, we still put something up on the property with a sign. We still put the notice of public hearing in the newspaper.
Okay.
I mean, so there is other ways of noticing other than a direct mail. And I think Mr. Sitkin is, the required notice of that is the direct mail approach.
And you can do more.
Still doing all the other things.
And you can prescribe that in your code to do those other things should you want to.
Okay.
You have that. You have that flexibility.
Okay.
Any other questions for John? Carolyn?
I have a question for you, after I've been thinking a lot about this, it seems like to me that since we went and put all the new streets in the land like this, everybody that owns on the north side of the street cannot ever ask for a street from the south side of the street. And everything is moved, the sidewalks and all that stuff is dedicated on the north side of the street. So if we do any vacation on east and west or that, it's only going to benefit the people from the south side of the street.
Well, that may be a... But, well, I think it may be that there's no, I'm not advocating a position, but if you go down in time, there may be, the city has no need for that 20 feet of right-of-way. Okay, then you're going to, maybe you don't grant the vacation because of that, or you grant a vacation and retain an easement. But that's a decision to make at the time if the application comes forward, because you don't know all the circumstances now or in 5 years. And I'll give you an example. I'm hypothetical. If you're in Seattle and they're facing a massive affordable housing issue, and if you said, gosh, there's a roadway with 20 feet, that if we vacated 20 feet of that right-of-way, these property owners under zoning might be able to get an extra unit and we can solve an affordability and a housing crisis because we vacated 20 feet on 10 blocks. And I'm making it up here, Charlie. Maybe you'd say, yeah, we would vacate that 20 feet on the south side of that street because now those people have the ability to buy some property, expand their zoning capacity, and do some infill. It's not Blaine's issue today, by and large, but in 20 years, maybe it is. Would you want to have that flexibility over time? I don't know. But that's, I'm trying to say not limit that flexibility over time. Well, that's but they also about a sidewalk, and maybe that's a value.
Eric, you have a question?
Questions and comments. I feel like you've answered the question well as far as to like notifying. Well, actually, you answered the question well as to notifying enough people in town. I don't know if Meg would want direct mailing or not, but I like the fact that it's in.
Say again.
I'm happy with that.
Okay.
You can't legislate common sense, and you shouldn't try. And as long as the city, and I believe the city has a commitment to openness and to making sure that people are notified, I'm happy with that. And I mean, also in the inability to limit to legislate common sense, I'm on it. We have public benefit here.
back in there somewhere. So I understand your argument with regards to removing the specificity, because I think that future councils may come up with a different kind of public benefit that we can't envision here, and we can only hope that and trust that the electorate will bring people in business to spend.
And I totally see your point of not wanting to paint us into a corner, litigiously. But I do see...
Not that there's anything wrong with that if you're counsel. Believe me, litigation is a good thing.
But, I do see a number of things on here, and there's maybe others we haven't looked at that I don't feel comfortable throwing them all out or putting them all on. I think there maybe needs to be some more discussion on the matter. And the last kind of question or comment is, Raven, how many vacations do we have in a one-year or five-year or ten-year period?
It's not something that we can dial in because they just come when they come. I was informing Councilmember Olson earlier this evening that we have two that are sitting waiting on the outcome of tonight. Last year we had two, and I think a couple of years before we had one, and that's all that's been in the 6 years of it.
So if I could wrap up and summarize, I would recommend you delete the public benefit definition. My recommendation is, Council, to delete the proposed public benefit definition that's in the code, that proposal.
In its entirety.
Keeping that 0702D that references public interest, but delete the definitions that we were talking about. And if you want to expand the notice requirements along with, as put in code, along with what Raven was mentioning, so you have assurance of notice, whether it's posting the property or putting on your website or however it is, that's fine. You can do that.
Thanks.
I would suggest that we open to the public testimony at this time.
It's up to you whether I ask the public's questions. I'm happy to, but it's up to you, Mr. Mayor.
Thanks, John. Okay, but before we open up to the public, I got a couple questions here for the council. At this time, we're going to conduct a public hearing in the matter of street vacations ordinance. The concern is that hearing be both fair in substance and procedure. And to meet that fairness requirement, I need to ask if any council member has any interest in the property or subject matter of the hearing tonight. No. Does any council member have any direct or indirect financial benefit in the outcome of the hearing?
No.
Has any council member engaged in communications outside of the hearing with proponents or opponents of the issue to be heard? Mm-hmm. Can each of you be fair and impartial hearing the testimony tonight and rendering a decision?
Yes.
Okay, so I now declare the public hearing open. I will ask the city clerk to read in the record the list of written communications, and I understand we don't have any.
No, we did not receive any.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to the public hearing? Dennis, could you please come up and state your name and address, sir?
Dennis R. Wilson, 860 Georgia Street. I just have one question for John. The term abetting law, as I read it in the proposed document from the city, they're expanding it to include the opposite side of the street.
I would say that that's the way we have said in the ordinance that immediately abutting includes those immediately adjacent across the street. And understand, in a right-of-way scenario, the fee interest in 90%+ of the cases, that fee simple interest goes to the middle of the right-of-way. So when a right-of-way is being vacated, even if it's one half of the right-of-way, that property owner on the opposite side of the street has a fee interest abutting the right-of-way that's being vacated. So in most all situations, we want the property owner on what would be the opposite, people think of as the opposite side of the street, they're actually abutting, because of the underlying fee interests. So, that is what I would consider abetting. We try to define that as such. Now, is that an agreement with the
state? State law does not provide abutting as a definition in the statute for vacations. When you interpret a statute, you look at its ordinary meaning, and I've looked at the Department of Transportation rules. They kind of refer to the same concept as immediately. When you look at abutting and a definition of Webster's or in Black's Law Dictionary, which is where the courts would go to look for the ordinary meaning of a term, it is that immediately next to, at a boundary, abutting. So, you know, the only scenario would be as if the fee simple, the right-of-way, doesn't go exactly over the two pieces and it's a portion, and there may be only abutting, the only vacation is that 20-foot scenario of an 80-foot right-of-way, so there's just a little portion over here, and if we might cover that, we just try to expand that definition to say, would you include that, that property owner next to you?
So someone's only wanting to vacate a strip?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 20 feet.
At 20 feet, we try to say the immediately next to, we try to expand that definition just a little bit to include that across the right-of-way because of that anticipated scenario that if you only took 20 feet of a vacation of an 80-foot right-of-way, you leave this little 20-foot gap before the fee simple line. Maybe I do it on a map, it'd be easier to see. We tried to expand that definition so you would encompass the one across the street.
So that change is from what it was in the old
order. Dennis, can you speak into the mic, please?
It was only on one side.
Dennis, could you say that again in the mic, please?
So the change from the old ordinance makes it the opposite side of the street is also abutting. And in the past, it was only on this one side where the vacation was requested.
Right.
I think that's significant.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
That's right.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak at the public hearing this evening? Hearing none, we have the option, Council, to either close the public hearing or we could hold it over for 2 weeks.
Do you want to try to get more input from it?
I think we've held this open for quite some time. Raven has pointed out there are two applicants who have been waiting very patiently for us to resolve this matter. We've had a lot of input from the public and a lot of discussion, so I'd like to close the public hearing and see if we can come to a decision tonight.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing on the street vacation then. Next, we have the Title 13 Public Services.
Are we going to take action on this tonight or not?
Title 12, yes, and Title 13, I did not.
Okay.
No. Sure, I'm sorry.
Okay. So, I'm going to load up. So similar to Title 12, I was just going to screen through what I presented to you at our study session. I will just note that I have also reinserted into your agenda packet kind of the key decision points. I will say in the process of drafting this that the only section that has complete legal review is 13 or 7, which is the one that had the most amount of changes. I have accepted those changes with the legal review, and I'll point those out as we go. With the remaining sections that are here, I left the track changes in your packet. So hopefully that is self-explanatory. So just very quickly, this is a pretty much a full overhaul of the title. There are financial issues that are waiting on the pending decision relating to fees and so forth, but for the most part, I think we've been doing a pretty steady process of moving through this. So just to reiterate, for each section, I'm going to go really fast. So for 13.01 and 13.02 and 13.03, these are really, really small routine changes where I found inconsistent definitions or references, the DOE manual not having the right amount of requirements. it was referencing an old manual. So we just kind of cleaned that up as a part of this. There's really nothing substantial. And then 1307 is the one where we did the most amount of revisions. There have been a lot of people that have been very interested in this particular section because it relates very much to what we ask for in fees, especially development fees, which we call GFFs, general facility fees. What this means is for we're proposing to essentially reduce those for accessory dwelling units and hotel motels. And in the case of multifamily and duplex, we want to match definitions to the International Residential Code, which has a duplex not being referred to as a multifamily. And that affects some of our charges in a small way. And then for all other definitions in terms of the types of use relating to equivalent residential units, we then bring it back to the size of the meter, so that's what the standard flow factor relates to. So this kind of summarizes that. Again, single family duplex was before duplex kind of got lumped into multifamily. That has created some issues with consistency and permitting on the accessory dwelling side and on the motel side. We're proposing to reduce that. I will say in reviewing this with my own staff that we're only proposing to change this for wastewater and water fees. We don't have a connection fee for electrical, and the way that our light utility works, they actually prefer for duplexes to remain in that multifamily aspect. It really has a whole lot to do more with prepays for the line extension and the way that we invoice different meters and stuff. It would cause problems with the power utility. So I'm pretty sure this is just a repetition, so I'm just going to keep moving along. The other major topic that we talked about in the study session pertained to whether or not we want to change whether or not we allow sewer in our urban growth area boundary. We got some financial information back and forth, and Michael Jones spoke and I spoke. And really, it's truly a matter of how you want to manage our community and our citizens. You have the option of both long and short-term revenue. That varies whether something's in the city and the county. In the county, we charge 150% of the rate for both development charges as well as the ongoing rate. But we lose things like real estate excise tax. We have less of an opportunity to weigh in on what is built in urban growth area because that's county zoning and so forth. We don't get other impact fees like for parks if something's not in the city. So, and then there's also property tax on an annual basis. So this is kind of the comparison of what you might see in the year of construction and then ongoing see that something in the city versus in the county does have increased revenue but not in the general fund. So you're getting more of that utility revenue but you're not seeing that in the general services. And this kind of shows that graphically on the level for a typical $300,000 home, what that would look like. So these are the different areas of the code that we're proposing to change, and we attempted to do our best to communicate all of those things, and I would suggest opening it up for public comment this time.
Thank you, Raven. So we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing on Title 13. Does anybody in the audience would like to come step forward and speak about the issue? Have any feelings on it? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing. We'll move on to council.
So we will be bringing you back an ordinance possibly at the next meeting, if not the meeting after, once our legal is reviewed. I would ask that if any council members have any input or guidance on anything that you've heard tonight, we love that, so we're not debating that at the ordinance time. But certainly staff is available if you have any questions.
Thank you, Raven.
I do not have council direction on that, so we would greatly love that information so that we could put that to bed.
How do other council members feel about that?
I'd agree with Mr. Hawkins.
Me too.
Right.
So we would limit provision of utilities to within our city limits. Yeah.
Wastewater.
Yeah. Wastewater and water.
We actually provide water outside the city and run it through wholesale as well as through contracts with Bell Bay Jackson and Value Water Associations. So it really is wastewater that this is critical to, because we also have power outside the city limits.
Would it also apply, though, to, for example, if someone who is not part of one of those water associations were to apply for water service 200 feet outside the city limits, could they just drop a pipe?
The appropriate microphone. The way the water system works, it's a water service area boundary that is specifically identified in our comprehensive plan, and it is specific to what properties would have been served by those associations.
Any other questions?
Mr. Lawrenson, I would just also clarify that, as Raven is kind of alluding to, is really the sewer is the critical thing for controlling urban densities, because you're not able to subdivide to urban densities unless you have both water and sewer. So water may be available in some instances, but it's not going to let someone to go to 6 or 8 or 4 dwelling units per acre because they don't have sewer. Even if they could fit all those septics on the property, without sewer, you still can't develop at urban densities because it's the law in the county, and that's our controlling mechanism.
Thank you, Mike.
So with this, we're also looking at restricting sewer outside the city.
So let's move on to the council action items. The first item is titled 12 Street Vacation Ordinance.
So you probably heard me speak enough on this evening. I guess this is your opportunity to make any recommendations or changes to the ordinance before you, such that we can come to a place of decision this evening.
Anybody have any questions for Raven? Comments?
As I mentioned before, I think it's time for us to take action.
Okay.
I'm satisfied with Mr. Sitkin's explanation. As long as we keep public benefit and it's there in 12-7-02-D. Public interest is there.
Thank you.
Just removing this definition to remove the specificity, I'd like to make a motion to remove that.
Okay. Let me just read the recommendation from the county. Any other questions for Raven? No? Okay. Thank you, Raven.
So I'm just to clarify, I will be striking paragraph number 4 in the definitions. Are there any other changes requested by council?
In your motion, was there any other changes requested? Megan, do you have anything else you want to change? No.
Okay, so hearing none, I would make the recommendation then that council adopt ordinance 18-2908 amending Blaine Municipal Code Title 12.16 Street Vacation Procedures, with the one change to the ordinance as described, after which time the ordinance, I guess that part of my recommendation should just go away.
So adopt the ordinance with that one change.
Okay. Sam, did you get that, or do you want to repeat it?
If you could repeat it for the record, that'd be great.
Read it again. Okay.
So adopt ordinance 18-2908, amending Wayne Municipal Code Title 12.16, Street Vacation Procedures, with the one amendment to remove paragraph 4 in the definition section. Which we will do directly.
Do I have a motion for that?
So moved. I did it already.
Seconded.
Okay. The motion is moved by Megan and seconded by Alicia. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay. Next item is bid rejection for 665 Peace Portal Drive demolition, and that must be Tim.
Hello, Council. Tonight I'm here to let you know that on February 9th at 10 a.m. we received one and only one bid to demolish 665 Peace Portal building, previously occupied by Casa Azul. That bid amount was for $406,361.79. The city currently, with their attorney, is working as diligently as possible to resequence the chain in which the building will be demolished. And with that resequencing that we hope will be agreed to, and all parties will come together soon, after that point, we'll go out to bid again to demo 665 Peace Portal building, and we believe that that will reduce the cost of the bids significantly.
Okay, excellent. Any questions for Tim?
What does resequencing mean when you're tearing a building down?
So currently, one of the issues we're involved with right now is how to stabilize the building that is currently occupied by the flower shop, Blaine Bouquet. Our original bid request is for our demolition contractor to stabilize her wall in the process of tearing down 665 Peace Portal. The new sequence will include her completing all structural repairs on her building in order to stabilize the building internally within her building prior to us beginning the demolition of 665.
What's that timeline look like?
Currently we have a request to for her to respond with an agreement to do that work within 10 days from last Thursday. If she responds that she's willing to complete that work in her portion of the building first, then we'll craft a new agreed order between the two parties, which will outline all those time frames. And I'd be happy to update you once we have that new agreed order on exact time frames for the work to be completed.
Any other questions for Tim? No? Thank you, Tim.
So with that, I was just here to request that Council reject the bid that we have currently received.
Okay. So obviously, the staff recommends Council that the City Council accept reject the bid.
So moved. Seconded.
Moved and seconded by Mary Lou. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Nays? Motion carried. And now we have the bid award for the Loomis Loop.
So this one hopefully remains easy. So as you might recall, we rejected bids on a prior bid for the Loomis Trail Electrical Loop Project. We took the single bid that was received, and we made some distinctions in the plans. Made some further arrangements with the county. We moved the alignment away from the bottom of the ditch to reduce the amount of environmental exposure.
And we put the project back out to bid and received four bids the second time. The low bid was submitted by Cerro Electric in the amount of $235,226. While this still is above the engineer's estimate, we feel that the bid and the fact that we got the four sealed bids and they're all in relative nature to each other, we feel it is a good price, and that staff then recommends the city council accept the bid and authorize the city manager to enter into this contract with Cell Electric in the amount of $235,226. I will just add that Cell was the company that did the work in Vista Terrace for the electrical, and they also did all the electrical for Seasmark, so we feel like we've worked out all the kinks in terms of them working in our distribution system, and I think that they'll do a really good job on the project.
Excellent. Any questions for Raven? Okay, we heard the staff's recommendation. I would accept a motion to accept the bid.
So moved.
Moved by Alicia.
Second.
Second by Eric. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays. Motion carries. And then item four, ordinance 18-2911, 2018 budget amendment, police vehicles. Jeff.
So you have before you a budget amendment to the General Fund Police Department budget for the purchase of five police vehicles in the amount, total amount of $200,000. So this information was presented to the Finance Committee at its April 19th meeting. The chief attended, and at the meeting he stated that five vehicles need to be replaced immediately, and that they're in really bad condition. They've reached basically the end of their useful life. They have a host of issues, such as mold and mildew in the interior, steering issues, and possible fire risks. So they pose a risk to the operators of those vehicles. So the police department has recommended that five refurbished vehicles be purchased to replace the unserviceable vehicles. And so the cost of the vehicles is about between $30,000 and $40,000 a piece. We've built in a contingency in this budget amendment for if they come in at $40,000 per vehicle. So the source of funding comes from proceeds from the sale of the airport property, which is in the general fund reserve. So with that, the Finance Committee recommends that the council approve ordinance 18-2911, amending the 2018 budget for the general fund and the general fund reserve. Now, if the Finance Committee members have any comments that were at that meeting.
Mm-hmm. First, I'll ask you, is any of the council members that want to have questions? Megan?
Yeah, I have a couple. First of all, and this is something that maybe I can appeal to the shared memory of council members and staff. My understanding when we discussed this in the past is that the intent of the funds that were secured from the sale of the airport property was to not just go into the general fund, but to buy something.
Correct. As a one-time revenue for one-time expenses or capital expenses, and this would certainly qualify
in that regard. Okay.
Yeah.
That was the first thing. My concern is that, honestly, this is the first we heard at budget time. We heard from the chief that there were some changes that needed to be made. Fencing, changes to the computer room, mm-hmm. there were costs outlined. He was taking over a new department, and there were definitely some expenditures that needed to be made, and these vehicles weren't brought up at that time. So I think it's unfortunate that the chief isn't here, but perhaps other people who are at that finance meeting could speak a little bit for my benefit as to why this issue has come up, when it has come up, and why the vehicles all need to be replaced immediately rather than in a phased fashion. And then my last question, whether or not this was brought up at the meeting or not, I don't know, is that we are surplusing, we're replacing 5 vehicles, but surplusing 7. I'm wondering, again, this probably would be a question for the chief.
Well, some of the there's 5 patrol vehicles, and I think the 2 other vehicles are like supplementary. They're not patrol vehicles.
And they do not need to be replaced?
My guess not. I mean, you'd have to check with the chief, but no. I mean, he provided these
vehicles, and we're doing a big vehicle buy. Let's do it all at once, or what's the? I'd like to know the rationale there.
So, is the finance committee going to respond? You know, I can talk about it too. But.
Yeah.
So, and you probably have more detail because you probably talked to the chief more about it. According to the chief, and according to the state inspection or whatever inspection that was, that
the lean map report.
There we go.
Yeah.
These 5 vehicles are part of the overall fleet deficiency, along with deficiencies in many other things, some financial, some not. This, unfortunately, is a very expensive Band-Aid for the greater fleet issues that are going on. You know, the thought that we're buying used vehicles at 30, I thought 30, but you're saying upwards to 40, is better in my eyes than a $60,000 or $70,000 vehicle. So that's kind of where the chief was going on that. Was that kind of your understanding, Steve?
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have anything to add, Dave, as far as that goes?
I'll just add a couple of comments. If you want to, well, one of the things is that I'm speaking.
One of the things is that, you know, council for a while is during the recession, we went through a period of time that we really did not properly fund the police department. And this is just catching. This is way cheaper than we had to pay full price for these cars. It's something that needs to be done. I mean, you know, because we did, Mike came to us asking for stuff. We just did, there was no money. And so we weren't able to do a lot of this stuff. So this is catch up. It needs to be done. So
I would agree on that. I also think that from my observations and also talking with the police chief, and then just somewhat history of the city, we're really good at buying things. We're not particularly good at surplusing things. And so I can tell you there is truckloads of stuff that are going to be thrown away or surplus at the police department as we speak. You know, they're going through a major, and that's one of my reports, is to suggest to council, if you have time, to go over to the police department. There's been a complete renovation of the building. That's all come from within the structure of their budget. But the entire police department's been renovated. Ceilings, floors, paints, walls have been removed, floors have been replaced, offices have been built, restrooms have been renovated, and it's a complete revision and rebuild of that facility, working within the framework of their current budget. If we could have bought these cars within the budget, we would be doing that and reporting to the council. But the most important part to think to remember is police vehicles are the office of the police officers. If they run out of credit at once, they don't have an office to work with. And what's happening is that the vehicles, more regularly than not, are broken down. They don't start at the beginning stop. In fact, that's one of the problems with finding the vehicle when you park it running. And part of that is to keep your electronics going and the air conditioner. There's a chance that some of these cars won't start after they've been shut off, shipped. So they're very, very risk prone, and the only solution for them is to replace them. Typically, we've been replacing cars at about $70,000. Those are the Ford Escapes or Explorers, I think they're called. And the newer looking ones, these that we're buying are renovated Crown Vicks, which is a real typical police vehicle. So it is a great value. I think you're going to see their service for probably 3 to 5 years, maybe. But this is going to be a really important question to council. We need to invest this next budget. Is the remainder of the fleet, and how do you want to handle that? This is really a response to a recognition that those cars that are being surplus are junk. It's an emergency. Yes, ma'am.
I can speak to that personally. I just want to bring up what we tabled earlier on about the surplus police vehicles that will be sold at auction. I personally spent all day Saturday removing sirens, lights, ham radios,
whatever, and a million feet of cabling from these vehicles, and we wondered whether when we were done these things would even start up. They barely did, so they are absolutely useless as police cars. I can guarantee having removed bolts and nuts and cables for 8 hours on them. They are, you wouldn't want to drive your mother-in-law to the hairdresser with them. So, yes, they absolutely need to be replaced, and these need to be auctioned off. Apparently, taxi companies will buy these old vehicles and refurbish them. But even if you decided that you didn't want to go ahead with this, it would probably cost $10,000 to re-cable and reinstall all this stuff in these cars to make them useful to the officers. And they really do need it. Each officer needs a vehicle. So we're five vehicles short.
I don't think anybody here would disagree that public safety is a top priority, and obviously these are unacceptable. I'm just curious, what's been used in the meantime? Surely this didn't happen yesterday. So have they been using these vehicles? Or what?
It's my impression, that's why we have seven, is one's always in the shop. One's always in the breaking down and being repaired. So we have this kind of rotation system that they've been using to keep vehicles operating. And so the idea, of course, is to get vehicles that are more reliable.
And given what Ms. Olson mentioned about the intent of the sale of the airport property, has there been discussion or could we have discussion about other areas of the budget in which to fund these vehicles?
Well, I think so within your jurisdiction, of course, is to decide all of those things. And I think from the staff's point of view, we don't like to bring these kinds of things to you in this fashion. You know, typically, this is all should have been done during the budget process in the fall, late summer, you would have had a chance to debate these things with the merits of other proposals. I think in the situation, when Chief Matt started up, he came late in the budget process, and what he found unfortunately was a request for fencing. We've had to go through some various gyrations to make that happen. Fences downtown are not something we just unilaterally put in. We had to have some adjustments and variances for that particular one. But I think when that came after the work, list of recommendations. And so we all knew it to use those cars, but that important chief's experience both in development. I don't know if you were here, Councilman Olson, but he talked about his recommendations three or four weeks ago. Time passes so fast. He's got strong opinions about that police department's function and capacity. I think that's what you're seeing something to. Things have been put off and deferred and delayed and ignored for so long for budget reasons or for practical reasons. That he feels compelled to bring it forward. I think the budget plans can review those requests.
Correct.
Concurring with the recommendation. So, and I wasn't part of that conversation, but I've been with many conversations with the chief about it. He'll bring a lot more to you.
Yeah. Anyway, I think this issue is very important, and I personally feel we need to approve this. I think during the budget process, we can look at and talk about in the future whether we want to put those funds back and fund this out of the general fund or whatever like that. But the chief definitely proved to me that both the public and the officers are in jeopardy with these vehicles. And which would affect the response time.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's fairly obvious that this is a dire situation. We don't want a police vehicle blowing up or starting fire, and it's unacceptable to expect our respected police officers to drive a vehicle with mold and mildew.
Thank you. When you say put the funds back, are you talking about repayment from the general fund to the airport fund? Is that
right? Yeah, the council has the option to look at that during the, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff,
that's correct.
During the budgeting
yes.
process to say, okay, this is something, if everybody feels strongly, we wanted a different use for the airport funds, we could work at doing that. But I think at this point now, we need to act on what's in front of us. Okay.
I don't know if this is possible. I definitely agree we need to approve the budget amendment at this time, but I'm just going to, maybe you've spoken to the chief about this, I'm going to add to the surplus list. There are 7 vehicles here and 5 on the list. If we have...
Well, there's other vehicles, I mean, 1986 and 1998.
If the chief has something lined up, I don't want to pass an amendment tonight that's going to hamstring the situation. And if he's surplusing 7 vehicles and he has a line to refurbished vehicles at $30,000 or $40,000, do we want to go to a maximum of?
I think what. Yeah.
Right.
The other two are not being used.
Yeah, have not been on the road for years. They've just been sitting there as like they should, as David said. We've got lots of stuff over there in the equipment that should have went.
Should have been surplus years ago.
From a desk to a vehicle to whatever it might be, and it just wasn't a priority. So okay. Now we're cleaning house.
Got it.
Okay. Okay. So do you want to go over the motion one more time for us, Jeff?
Yes.
Get it in record.
Okay. So the motion is the Finance Committee recommends that the Council approve Ordinance 18-2911, amending the 2018 budget for the General Fund 001 and the General Fund Reserve.
So moved.
So it's been moved by Alicia, second by Mary Lou. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nay. Motion carries. Thank you.
And we also have the resolution, if
right.
You want to.
Yeah. Right.
We need the budget.
Could we deal with that now?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that okay? Sam, is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So we can bring item 4 back, what was on the consent agenda.
So I move that we adopt resolution 1732-18, declaring certain vehicles and weapons to be surplus property.
Okay. Did you get that, Sam?
Yeah. Actually, could you repeat that for me?
Could you repeat it one more time, Meg?
I move that we, the Council adopt Resolution 1732-18, declaring certain vehicles and weapons to be surplus property.
Okay.
I second it.
And moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Item 5, Resolution 1733-18, linear extension for Brandis Pond preliminary plat.
Council, the way our zoning code works, it allows preliminary plats 7 years to go to development. Development means putting in the infrastructure, water, sewer, electric, stormwater, roads, sidewalks, those sorts of things, and then record that plat, which is the mechanism that creates individual properties for sale. If someone doesn't do that within the 7-year time frame, their preliminary plat expires. They can reapply or something else can happen with the property, but that entitlement goes away. When Brandis Pond was approved, it was approved for a little over 1,000 residential units in a small commercial area, some parks, stormwater, open space, various things like that. And it also had one preliminary plat for the first phases of the project to develop 403 of those 1,000-plus units. Grandis Pond was approved in 2011, and we're coming up on the 7-year expiration. The applicant has not developed yet for a variety of reasons, mostly having to do with the slow recovery and limits on available capital, but the significant costs of bringing infrastructure to the East Blaine service area. As you know, the city's been working to try and get some of that funding, and that's one of the reasons why Representative Van Werven was here receiving a proclamation. They're eligible for 2 1-year extensions. They have to come one at a time, according to our code. So the applicant has a letter that is attached as attachment 1, their request for their first 1-year extension, and then attachment 2 to this request for council action is the resolution. And resolution 1733-18 would extend the plat so that it would expire on the first day of June in 2019, unless the applicant came forward with another timely request to request another extension. The applicant's representative, Craig Parkinson, the engineer on the project, is here. If you have questions about the project or the infrastructure challenges, I'm sure he's more than happy to answer those for you. But that's essentially the gist of it. If you don't grant the extension, it would expire June 1st of this year, and then the applicant would be eligible to come back in. I do believe they actually intend to come in sometime in the near future with a new preliminary plat just to extend for the full 7 years, but they're not ready to do that before June 1st of this year.
Does the council have any questions for Michael or for the representative? Michael, you read the motion again for me, please?
Sure. The motion would be to approve Resolution 1733-18, extending the expiration timeline for the Grandis Pond preliminary plat and the associated planned unit development for 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Moved by Charlie.
Second.
Seconded by Eric. Sam, did you get it?
Yes, I did. Thank
you. Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Nay. Motion carries. Item 6 on the action item is the voting ward change.
So in your packet, Counselor, you've had a chance, I think, to take a look at some of the information that was provided to me and to you by former Councilmember Olson. He's here tonight. As you know from conversations with him in the past, he's very interested in changing the ward voting configuration that we have now to one that's more in line with his thinking, which is, and I'll let him speak for his point of view if you want, but right now, just as a reference, if there are three or more interested parties in a particular ward, there's a preliminary election which then selects down to two people, and that's done by the ward, specific to the ward, and then those two run off at the general election, and that's voted on by the city at large. So everybody in the city votes for that particular ward. And it's kind of a bit unusual. Most every place I've worked, been, districts are specific to individuals that live in that district. They come from the district as candidates, and they're voted on by their constituents within their boundaries. So this is a little bit unusual. Certainly within the law allows for it. In fact, that's why we've been doing it. And then recently the laws have changed to allow the city to have more authority to change that. Up until this change in law, you couldn't have done that. This was very old. So the question before the council tonight is, would you like for us to move forward to initiate the ordinances and rules, laws, to effectuate this type of change? You're not voting on it tonight because you haven't got anything in front of you. It's really more, do you want us to take the time and effort and come back with two within the next meeting or two with a new ordinance proposal. John Sitton would have to work with us. I don't know exactly what form that would take, but it's certainly something that the council has the authority to do. If you want us to do that, we can certainly bring something to you to debate, to discuss and debate and decide upon. Yes, ma'am.
It seems to me that if you look at nationwide, you do have these preliminary elections when you have within one party several candidates and you want to narrow down to the one candidate representing that party in the November elections. But in our ward system, we are nonpartisan, so it doesn't make as much sense to have these sub-elections to select two people out of the bunch to run in November. It comes at a considerable cost, which we pay, as far as I understand.
We do.
So there is a question about that. To address Mr. Olison's point of view, I agree with him 100%. I think the people living in that community should decide who they want to be their representative. Even if there are five people standing on the November ballot, I think that the people in that ward should be the ones to determine who's going to represent them and not have that decision influenced by two-thirds of the rest of the voting members of Lane who don't live in that ward and who may not know any of the candidates, who may not care who the candidates are, who may be unaware of the local issues within that given ward. So it seems to me it makes much more sense to have
what goes on in the ward, local issues, being influenced by the people affected by those local issues.
You're here?
That's what I said.
Okay.
Sounds like it's worth further discussion.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess I do have a comment. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I feel like if I'm only worried about the, let's say, 900 people in my ward that I have to make happy, that's all, as a politician, I would make happy. Currently, and I guess making happy is not the right term, be concerned with, right? Because certainly we don't always make people happy. But right now, today, I'm concerned with the overall of Blaine, right? And since we're a small city, I think that every decision we make affects everybody else in town. If we were a giant ward, if we were the city of Detroit, I certainly would only care about my folks because I would want to get reelected and I would want to make sure that the parks all stay in my ward and I get the hospital or whatever the case. But right now I feel like I represent everybody in the city. So and I like that. So.
Sounds like a worthy debate.
Council, which direction do you want to give the staff? Carolyn?
I'd like to have further debate. Sounds like not yes. Tonight.
Okay, we'll bring it back. Yes. Thank you very much. Yes.
Thank you, David. Okay, commission, committee, and board reports. I have no report for my two committees. Alicia for Boys and Girls Club.
There have been some fee structure changes at the Boys and Girls Club that have caused some discussion. That is a Whatcom County-wide fee change. It's a fairly significant change for the summer in programming and in fees. So there's just been some discussion concern of that. No resolution, just information for the general public to know that that's happening. The Port of Bellingham, I wish I could think of the number right now because it's very high, but has just awarded us with a really significant dollar amount for work on our port, the water quality down there. And so I will give you a further report next meeting when I have some more details. But this is of great interest to us. This is something that is out of the usual and much more than we've received, at least in a very long time. For port cleanup there.
Excellent, thank you, Richard. Charlie, your two committees? Thank you. Meg, on your two committees?
I don't have anything for Senior Center. Michael and I are meeting tomorrow with Christine Perkins from the Whatcom County Library System to sort of start preliminary discussions about what role they might play in potential library expansion in Blaine. Whether generally, the way it works is that the libraries don't pay for facilities. Friends and other jurisdictions pay for the facility, and then the library runs the facility. But there have been, that's become a bit of a moving target. If we look at the last two projects that the library system has been involved with, the new library in Point Roberts, which is almost complete, and now this Birch Bay project, the library, Whatcom County Library System, is beginning to invest more and more in facilities, so it's possible that with some discussion they could come on board in an expanded fashion as far as improving facilities in life.
Thank you. Eric, your committees?
Nothing to report. Okay.
And Finance Committee, Jeff?
You heard from the Finance Committee. No
thank
report.
You. Okay, and Bonnie's not here for hers. So we'll move on to department reports, and Raven, you're up.
So with the bid award today for Luma Sloop, I wanted to let you know that our largest project for this summer is going out to bid tomorrow. It's the Hughes Avenue improvements.
The road closure situation is a little bit more extensive than I thought. Our design engineer is actually recommending a 40-day closure of Hughes between Bell and Odell, and 30 days for Hughes between Peace Portal and Bell. And the reason for this is the type of surfacing that we're putting on the road, or the way that we're rebuilding the road, is instead of scooping everything up and building it back up again, we are going to be doing something called a cement-treated base, where they actually go in and they remove the asphalt and then they mix a concrete slurry into the base, and it means that you don't need to do a big excavation, which reduces a lot of cost. Unfortunately, concrete takes time to cure. It's one of those things. Once we have a contractor determine it is my intent to do some, like an open house type of thing to let the public know that this is coming down, the reason for it and so forth. And there may be, there is often ways that contractors can propose things that might be less disruptive is one of the reasons why I like to wait to know the contractor. And also because we put such an onus on the contractor for the safety of the public and communication and so forth, it gives the public that name, okay, I know to talk to so-and-so. So I just wanted to update you on that. We're also putting out the 8th Street School Safety Improvements. That was a project that we had hoped would extend from the I-5 bridge to the east all the way to SR 43. Unfortunately, we were only able to get funding to 6th from the grant agency. So with our local dollars, possibly TBD if other dollars in the street fund don't look doable, depending on what we get for Hughes Avenue, we will be putting in ramps, just the ADA compliant ramps all the way down past the school to SR 543. And that's, in my mind, just as important as the resurfacing of the street is, you know, driving by there two or three times a day often and seeing that we're not compliant with current standards. I'm also very pleased to inform you, I probably shouldn't give names yet, but I we have a new assistant director starting on June 18th. I want to thank Councilmember Stewart for sitting through the whole morning of the interview in this room, which was a presentation by each of the four finalists, and I have a written concurrence that we've reached an agreement, but I don't yet have his letter of offer back. So, but I will say that we're, I think all of the staff that participated in the interviews, which we had a preliminary and then a final interview process, including the tour and time with Dave and Michael and myself, I mean, everybody was unanimous in this guy being the best candidate and also the best complement to the skill set that I offer the city. So I'm really excited, and it's been a long haul. I don't think when Bill gave notice last August or last July that we thought that we would be without an assistant director this long. I had a little flyer queued up in the computer for you, but in the interest of time, I'll just let you know that May 20th through 26th is National Public Works Week. So if you see a public works professional on the street, be sure to thank them this month. We actually have a minor sewer emergency this morning on Drayton Harbor Road, and because of the fast action and the teamwork and just all the cards aligning, it did not result in any spill. We fixed the problem on the same day. The crew was able to eat lunch in the break room, go back out to the job. So we are often the silent heroes that you don't think about on a day-to-day basis. So that 1 week of the year, the American Public Works Association tries to bring that to the forefront. So I like to share that with you when it comes up. And then, the process for the grant that the legislature got us for East Blaine has started. We have paperwork with the state that we'll be submitting this week and that they'll sign this morning. So that's exciting. And also wanted to let you know, and Dennis might appreciate this because I think you've actually given my contact information, but the Icelandic Society actually got some donations to uncover some markers that were placed in the cemetery, and we were able to work closely with them and get that to happen this month with our part-time cemetery maintenance worker. So, you know, things that we can do that are small things that help our community is all that we're about. So that's my update, unless there's any questions.
Any questions for Raven? Thank you, Raven. Community development?
Just keep this pretty quick. I wanted to let you know it is that time of year that enforcement for vegetation increases dramatically, but I think if you look around, you will also notice that after a couple of years of dedicated effort in that end, there are properties that used to be vegetation bonanzas this time of year are nicely mowed, and others are not, but there are some that are nicely mowed. Places that actually, they look like black road patches and hay fields in the past, now they look like lawns after a couple years of mowing. So that is really great to see, but just understand that it is a time of year of a lot of extra work when it comes to enforcement, because every one of those yards that you see that's 18 inches tall is due a letter, and it creates a lot of workload for Maddie. So we're working on it, but I think there's some great progress that you can see on the ground out there, people that are doing it without getting contacted. There is an advertisement that we've run in the Northern Light, you may have seen it, reminding people that it is a requirement to mow your vegetation, and I think that that's probably had some effect. Other than that, I don't have much to report, but I did want to mention that this is sort of conference time of year for community development, and just wanted to mention that with some of the travel and training expenditures that were budgeted, we've had staff attend a variety of conferences. Alex Wenger attended the Planning Association of Washington Conference, and due to his dedicated efforts there as president of the board of the Planning Association of Washington, some of his was paid for by the association, part also by the city. Maddie and Debbie Harder both went to the Main Street Conference. I know that Councilmember Rule went as well. It sounded like it was a great conference. I know particularly Maddie came back energized and excited to work on that. Debbie's been to a couple before, so she's more familiar with the topic. But it's always a really good conference, and it's really energizing. It's perfect timing, I think, for what we're trying to do. And Tim just recently attended the ICC, or National Code Conference on code amendments, where he's able to provide input on changes that may affect small cities and small jurisdictions differently than others. He also received a partial scholarship for that, so that was nice. It's really good to see people go and attend and increase their skill set and knowledge, but also it's just really good to see because people come back really energized to do their jobs, and that's fantastic. So just want to thank you for those expenditures, because it means a lot to the staff to know that they get that opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. City Clerk.
All right, good evening, Council. You should have in front of you the new Community Center reader board sign. The reason why I'm bringing this to you today is there's a chance moving forward someone's going to come up to you in the street or wherever and ask you, hey, can I put something in the new reader board? You know, Grandma's birthday's coming up, and can I put something? Essentially, the answer is no. You'll see that reflected in the new policy. It was understood, since according to our municipal code, it has to be for a community event. The City of Blaine business, community center events, as well as events that are sponsored or financed by the City of Blaine, are the only events allowed on the sign. Yeah. That being said, is there any questions?
I had just one question.
Yes.
On that. It said that the senior center was the designated authority. Did that specifically mean the senior center, or did it mean the community center?
The senior center. So the senior center's
changing the messaging.
Yeah, they will be designated from City Hall as well as someone from Public Works and the Police Department. Just in case emergencies arise, we won't have a point of contact that can quickly post something to get it out to the public.
Gotcha. Thank you.
No problem.
Any other questions for Sam? Thank you, Sam.
Okay.
And Mr. City Manager.
Well, this is getting near the end of my reports to you folks. How about that? So I just have a few things. I'm going to kind of blend a little bit of the police public safety report tonight in my report. First, I just want to report that Michael has been really working hard in the transition. It's really one of those things where you start to dive into it and learn as you go forward, and I think he's really taking that very seriously and has been working hard to figure out how to maintain that planning director job that he has and try to be involved in what I do. So I want to encourage him to do that. My meeting schedule is wide open for him to join us at any time. And so if there's a meeting with me, the chances are he's going to be there, if that's something we can get into his schedule. We're moving forward with the police chief recruitment. We talked on the phone earlier today with the proffering representative who's done the recruitment. He's got a short list that we're going to be looking at toward the end of the week or first of next week. They're going to do Skype interviews this week with the candidates they feel are most qualified. So that's moving forward. We're really excited about going to the Chuckanut Bay Food groundbreaking ceremony on Friday. That was a really nice event. You know, they had all of their employees were bused here in buses, and they provided some lunch from the PASA. And there's a couple of reasons for it. I think they had a lot of the ceremonial ground cutting, you know, shovel digging kind of a thing. I think more importantly, they wanted to show their employees, Blaine isn't that far north. It was just a short drive, and I think it was terrific. They did a really nice job of, you know, sharing with them their enthusiasm for the building, talked a bit about their history, and you know, it's really surprising. The growth within the last few years has been really terrific. They had mentioned the majority of the people that were there, and I think there were well over 75, 100 people had only been with the company in the last 5 years. There was just a small group that had started out with them, so it was great to see that and participate in that event. You know, they're going to have, after the groundbreaking, of course, they're hoping by the end of the year to have final. It's kind of a fun little debate between the contractor and the owners on when things are going to be done and what the schedule is like going forward and whether they're actually going to be able to talk to one another when the project's over. So I think they had a good relationship and could talk. We just talked a bit about the sign at the community center. I think it turned out really great. I don't think it's too bright. I think it has the right size text. As you've mentioned, or Sam mentioned, we are trying to keep the thing contained in terms of how it's utilized, and we're taking it a little bit slow and steady. The software that is used to operate the sign is it's not cloud-based. It's resident on a computer. So we can have a computer. I could have one, or Sam, and we could dial into to a modem. It's on Wi-Fi, and change the sign. The problem with doing that is that our libraries of language reside at the local level. So I could change the language of the senior program noticing, but it completely wipes it out. I can't go backwards. So we're trying to focus it on one or two operators, and primarily Kathy Sitkin can be the primary operator. She's going to create a library of notices. So once she creates one, it goes into the library, and she could pull it out if she needs to. For example, you know, we have the Saturday breakfast once a month. Once she creates that template, she just can reuse it over and over and over. If I were to work for my computer, I don't have any of her templates. So we're going to try to learn more about how that works. But I think the sign's going to be a really nice asset. And you're already seeing that she's got some consistency, the timing, the temperature, and those kind of things. There could be other messages. We're treating the sign very similarly to how we treat the rentals. So if the city sponsors, either through BTAC or through a nonprofit association, a group, then we've allowed that group to use that facility at no charge, the community center or the pavilion. And the reason for that, it doesn't make any sense for us to charge the group that we're already paying and funding for. It's just taking money off the table. So that's kind of the threshold. If the group is not being sponsored by the city, then the chances are they're not going to get access to the sign, unless they're sponsored by the senior program, or
for the community centers. So you're not going to see the Boys and Girls Club on it because they didn't pay for it. They're not big partners for us. They're not small partners, but you're not going to see a lot of school district notifications. That could change as we mature with the use of it, but right now we're just trying to keep it very tight because it could get out of hand pretty quick-like. So that's going forward. I'm excited about that. We also saw that the driveway is nearly done, and I think that's terrific. That's going to be a nice improvement. Just a quick update, we have been meeting with Dr. Allen and his wife, Dr. Casimira, and slow progress. You know, they have many years of service in the community, and it's really difficult to get family practitioners to come to a rural community. They've done a lot of work toward that. We've had some meetings with them trying to figure out how the city can work with that, so we continue to work with them. I just wanted to report that we're still doing that. Continuing to work with the Blaine East infrastructure, exit 274, that work is not completed. We're continuing to talk about how to best move forward with that. Raven's been working hard. We've been having conversations with the WashDOT, and we're expecting to meet with them, I think, within the next week or two to talk more about exit 274 in particular. We met this morning with the school district on the new SRO position. As you recall, there's been a conversation about having a full-time school resource officer, and the school board approved funding for 9 months. And so that's terrific. That's a resource that we don't have in our budget. They have funded half-time. When I say half-time, it's for 180-day school year. But now they've moved that to full-time. So you're going to see more about that in the upcoming budget. We've got two vacant positions now, so there's no financial impact to the city. But eventually we're going to want to talk more about that as we hopefully get more police officers and positions are filled. I mentioned it earlier a little bit. If you haven't been to the police department, I would suggest you take some time to go over there. And it was just a metamorphosis. When I first went to work here, I would go over, it was kind of like this kind of a cave feeling. It was dense and small and lots of offices and strange rooms, and it's all been opened up. Repainted, offices that are inside the records area are wide open now. It's really been a really terrific improvement. Communications amongst officers and in the rank and files has been really terrific. Then we've got some staffing changes. We have a lieutenant, which you've known about. We also hired a third sergeant, and that person is now working specifically on the policies that were recommended under that LEMAP program. Now, the city's owned the rights to Lexapol, which is a nationally recognized policy procedures manual for police, for 5 years. We've been paying $18,000 to $20,000 a year for that license. It's never been implemented. So we're moving to get that work accomplished. And that's really exciting to see that happening. When our new police chief comes on, we want all of this to keep moving forward. We've got such great momentum going, we don't want to change that. We're excited about the visitor center. If you haven't been down there recently, it's inside 99% finished. I think they've got to put the partitions in their restrooms for, you know, separate stalls and do some things like that, but it's really nearly finished. And we met last Friday, I think, with Carol, gone through the list of things that we need to do. It's a pretty short list of requirements that we have, and I think it's going to be a really terrific asset. We're scheduled to move in on June 1st, but only if the property's prepared for us. We can take possession of it, and we want to do that as soon as we can. So we might take possession and get it all outfitted, but we want to make sure it's safe and accessible for the public to come to it. So if you want to get a tour, if you haven't, please let us know, or just stop by and talk to Mike Hill. He'd be happy to let you in the space. I think it's going to be a really nice addition. And if you get him excited about it, he'll take you back in the old space that Woody's shop was in, and he'll show you his fireplace that he's going to put outside the building. It's, 18 feet long. It's going to be, 8 feet tall with a metal roof over it, so you can sit out there and have a hot chocolate or a cup of coffee. In the wintertime, it's going to be cold, but you'll be covered. And it's really going to be a gathering place. He's got I think, with the help of planning, they've put a similar type of retaining wall all around the property, very much like what they have at Edeline's, which is a place for people just to sit, kind of watch the traffic go by. So it's a really nice public asset that we're able to get and be part of.
So other than that, that's kind of my report for tonight. I won't be at the next meeting. I've got some other plans that I've made a long time ago, but I'll certainly be here in June. And then, this is my last meeting. And then Michael is going to be stepping up and working a little more directly with you. So, any questions for me tonight? Comments? Direction?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, David. Sam, any changes to the calendar?
No, there are none.
Okay. Unfinished business? And Mary Lou, you have some new business?
I just want to make one announcement. The Auxiliary Communication Services is a volunteer group that assists the Blaine Police Department, and on July the 4th, when we have all these people coming in, it's the members of this community who volunteer their time to control the traffic and maintain a steady flow of people so that the parade runs smoothly. We also are involved if there's any parades or protests, as we were with the school march recently, and any emergency things, if there's an emergency weather problem or something else, we will be contacted. We are all ham radio operators, and we can communicate through our group directly to the Emergency Control Center in Bellingham to service Whatcom County. So this is a valuable free service to the city that works in conjunction with the police. And on June 23rd, we're having our field day on the G Street Plaza, where we will bring our big comps van and tents and have all of our equipment up, and we encourage the public to come and visit and find out about us. We also will be really happy to see some of the city staff and council drop by and just say hello to just give us your support. So that's June 23rd, Field Days, the G Street Plaza.
They're a great group of dedicated people, absolutely. Anything else to come before the council? And hearing any, we adjourn at 8:06. Thank you.